to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Get ready to uncover the secrets, gain valuable insights, and conquer any dental challenge that comes your way. From advanced techniques, innovative technologies, and the ever-important set skills, Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. And today I'm really pleased and excited to have with me as my guest, Lisa Copeland. She's a registered dental hygienist that has taken her career to a different level. And she has a coaching program, Communicate with Influence, that she has had for 14 years. And I've done a little research on this, Lisa, and it sounds like you've got a pretty good grasp on helping practices learn the art of influential communication. So welcome to the podcast, Lisa. I'm glad to have you here with me today. And share with us a little bit about yourself.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. So I am a communication specialist, and I really focus on helping teams in better collaboration and starting, you know, from the foundation of communication. So I think the pandemic really revealed the gaps that we have in communication in our dental teams. And so working from not only a generational perspective, because that's a huge impact right now. We've got four or five generations in the workforce, but coaching them to learn to respect each other and understand where each other's coming from. And really focus on our positivity and our strengths instead of pointing fingers, right? Because we all tend to, when something goes wrong, it wasn't my fault, right? And so learning how to really respect each other, and that's going to help with your retention, which is a big issue, as you know, in dentistry. And so I'm coaching, you know, individuals or teams into better practice management by utilizing the foundation of communication.
Yeah. You opened up a number of topics there, and one of them that I look at, part of my emphasis, Lisa, with my podcast is to bring into the box of dentistry, into our practices, certain skills or aspects that we at times don't deem as having the impact that they do. And communication is one of them. And I agree with you. You know, the pandemic brought us very aware, at least people like you and I, that there needs to be a higher level of communication with people. I don't think dentists look at communication and the skills of communication with their staffs when they hire them. What? Tell me how you see that particular picture.
So hiring has to change from the way that we used to do it. I mean, from the explanation of the job description, you know, it has to be tailored for every single job position that you're having to fill. And looking at, you know, looking at the person's strengths and finding out where they're coming from and what is important to them in a career advancement as well, because the younger generations, they want to have opportunities to grow and learn and, you know, cross training and also reverse mentoring. I'm a big fan of reverse mentoring. You know, you take somebody with a skill set that's been maybe at the office for a really long time and you partner them with somebody that has a very different skill set, maybe their weakness. And so they each are going to learn from each other. And it's a really nice way to establish trust within the team members. And so you have to look at people's strengths and really focus on what's important to them, you know, particularly with benefits as well. You know, we used to always offer the same exact benefit to every single employee coming into our practice. And now I think it's important for us to have a menu that people can select from, because what's important to me is different than what's important to somebody who's been there for years and years. Right. And so you've got to really customize everything that we're offering people as far as hiring them and dive deep into what's important to them and what they want to achieve by working in your particular practice.
Now that's interesting. I have not been exposed to that concept of tailoring the benefit program to employees. Elaborate a little bit on that, Lisa, because I think that's interesting.
So you take, like, for example, if you have a younger person coming into the workforce and you're interviewing them, they may not have a family. They may not have, you know, a husband, wife. Benefits are different and important, but different things are important to them. And so maybe somebody who's established and has a family, they want help with daycare. But the younger person might want a gas, some kind of gas allowance or puppy care, you know, or, you know, doggy daycare is really popular. It's expensive and people have to have it for working. And so you've got to look at your benefits differently. And so I think about it having, you know, a menu is a good way to describe it, or buckets, right? And they choose from the buckets what they want. It all adds up to the same amount of money, but you're really customizing the benefits for them so that they are getting what they're looking for out of the employment. And so it's a really nice concept. It takes a little bit of work, like everything when you change, right? But you want to make sure that they're equal. That's the most important part, is you want to make sure that the bottom line is the value is equal. Everybody gets the same value, but different opportunities. And so they select what's important to them.
That's... Once I heard that and I was fascinated with the concept, my first thought was, okay, how do we keep this to where it's even? Because you and I both know that, you know, the staff will talk.
Oh, for sure.
Around the lunch table. I'm surprised, you know, the conversations that I overheard, but also that were shared with me. You know, they share their salaries. They share everything. Nothing is private with these kids anymore.
Yep. I think people always have talked, but it's risen to the top.
Yeah.
Right. And so.
I'm sure you're right. Yeah. Yeah. I just lived in my la la land that, you know, certain things were kept private and personal. And one of them was salary and, you know, what I receive. And that is not the case anymore. And I guess they probably collaborate for leverage.
Well, and the other thing that you need to do, because that is happening and be aware of it, you want to establish levels of different positions, right? You're not going to advance from an assistant to a hygienist without a license, right? But you can advance within the office as, you know, a senior hygienist, a junior hygienist, and maybe a mentee, right? So you have to have titles. And what I always suggest to offices is you let the people pick their titles. Right. Make it important to them for, you know, how are you going to distinguish between this person's getting a higher salary, but they've also been here for 14 years. They have more experience. They had more training. They've had more continuing education over the years. They specialize in certain things like lasers or ultrasonics. And so each level within the departments should be established to let people know that they are advancing, and that is also associated with their salaries.
Yeah, that's one thing I tried to do with my staff, because I wanted each one of them to feel their own identity and their own self-importance within the team. And, you know, when you say team, that kind of puts everybody in the same little huddle. But I like to give them their own distinct little titles so they felt like they were a fully vested contributor into the overall success of the practice. And I think when they do that, their buy-in is higher. And I want them to have pride in who they were and what they did.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that instills practice loyalty. And so you have, you know, unsolicited marketing occurring because they love where they work. They like their job. They feel respected. They are loyal to the practice and they trust the people that they work with. And so it's a beautiful thing to, you know, the more people feel appreciated, they'll go above and beyond what's expected of them. Yeah. And one of the things that I see is, you know, comments I hear all the time is they just don't want to work. Right. They just don't contribute to the team, or they're just lazy. And I think it's because they haven't been empowered with their own strengths.
Correct. Correct. I see a lot of dentists that they want to maintain too much control. And maybe they haven't been clear enough under themselves understanding their own vision and their own practice philosophy, but they're not willing to turn loose of things to staff. And I think that is a big, big leadership issue. And I think that's a huge step as far as leadership for a dentist, but it's also, as you intimated a minute ago, that is a huge step for the overall growth of the practice. Talk a little bit about that, Lisa.
Absolutely. And I think that starts with really having regular meetings. I watched what was happening in dentistry over the last couple of years, and I created a course called Optimizing Dental Team Meetings. And you have to have very regular, formulated, fun meetings that are productive for the practice. And so you've got to have your morning stand-ups or huddles, a lot of people call them. Research shows they're much more influential and much more beneficial if you are standing up and talking about the schedule. And what I always tell people to do is have once a week, a certain person runs it. So this week, I'm going to run it as a hygienist because I'm looking at different things than other people. Next week, The office manager runs it. And then having that meeting gets you off to a good start for the day. Offices that have huddles are 30% more productive. Yet so many offices don't do them. And then going into, you have a department meeting once a month, half an hour, just the department. And then you roll into, on the same day, roll into your all team meeting for the month. And you can bring some of the things that came up at the department meetings as well, but you have to have structure. You have to follow an agenda and people have to participate. And so whatever topic is being discussed, whoever brought the topic up is in charge of really talking about it and running the meeting at that point. So each person is contributing to the meeting. And then really, setting yourself up for success, having an annual meeting every single year, either the end of the year or the beginning of the year, so that you, like you said, understand your goals. And, what's your mission statement? Does your practice, do your employees even know your mission statement? Do they understand it? Do they believe in it? And are they living it? If they don't, then you need to create each year, look at that mission statement and recreate it so that it adjusts to not only what you want to achieve in the practice, but also to the people that are your employees.
Right. Years ago, I had a consultant come into the office and, we created a mission statement. And at times I kind of laughed at the process because other offices, you go in and you see the mission statement on the wall. And it's kind of like, okay, if I go back in there and I ask that staff person, tell me about your mission statement. They'll go, what mission statement? I have no clue. So right. I agree with mission statement, but there's one big catch to it. You've got to own it and live it.
Exactly.
And if you're going to put it out in the reception room, you better have your patients experiencing that mission statement for them, because people are always looking for validation of, is this really the right office for me? Mm-hmm. Have I made the correct decision in coming to this practice? And anything that gives them a reason to hesitate or wonder in that decision, that's a tough one to overcome.
Right.
I think that's interesting. Teams and offices that have morning huddle meetings are 30% more productive than those that do not. That is interesting. That statistic right there would be enough for me to go, whoa, tomorrow morning we are starting a morning huddle meeting. Share with me, Lisa, and the audience, what that morning huddle meeting looks like and sounds like.
So you want to have an agenda, a structured agenda, no more than 10 to 15 minutes, right? You want to keep it short and concise, and you want to, look at the schedule. Who's coming in? What does the schedule look like? Are there anything that we need to highlight as far as special needs for patients? Do they need a particular room? Right? I worked in an office where we only had one room that was ADA accessible. And so if we had the patient scheduled in the other operatory, we need to make a switch, right? And so looking at who's coming in, what always reflect back on the day before, what went really well and where could you have maybe a better experience for the patient or for the team? But you got to reflect backwards before you move forward. And so you always want to look at that. You also want to highlight any special instruments that you need or special, you know, is the case in from the lab? Is everything here? Do we have all the instruments that we need? This patient likes this assistant. They do really well together. So let's pair them together. Right. So you want to look at all the specifics of the schedule. But like I said, keep it short. And I'm a big fan of, you know, starting out the day with positivity. We used to have this little set of dice and it had inspirational, phrases, just one word on every side. And whoever was running the meeting used to, at the end of the meeting, we'd roll the dice and it would say, inspire our patients or inspire fun, right? Whatever it came up, that was our kind of thing for the day that we were going to aspire to. And so, you know, everything needs to be engaging and fun as well. If it's just, you know, a complaining session, that's why people don't feel they're valuable. So you've got to stay to that agenda. And each person in the office needs to learn how to run the meeting with that particular agenda. And so that you're always making it a productive meeting. That's true with all of your meetings that you have.
Yeah. One thing that I included in our morning huddle meetings that I thought was important, Lisa, was for us to look at patients that came in that day for opportunities to ask for referrals.
Love it.
And part of this was that, you know, communicate with influence was an artful point in time in that appointment with that patient that you rose above and gracefully asked them for a referral. And part of that evolved around the question, let's say it was a hygienist, say, you know, Lisa, thank you for coming in today. Share with me, how did I do with you today? How was your appointment with me? Now, you know, that can be a little bit of a setup because, you know, you're in the, there's an imbalance there in the relationship in that appointment time, but it does allow the patient the freedom to speak. And it depends upon how you ask the question. And if the more artful you are in that question, the more freedom that patient's going to feel in giving you a true, honest opinion.
Right.
But also it sets you up. When you're going in there and saying, okay, I made a commitment this morning that I was going to ask Mrs. Jones, I'm going to step it up here. But really, are you stepping it up or just doing what you normally do? Hopefully it's what you normally do. But you have to arise to the occasion to present an exceptional patient experience in order for that patient to say yes, they'll go out and refer. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of a way of, with each of my staff, they each had to do and ask for referral, one or two that day. And it set them up to where they had to kind of posture themselves a little bit differently through the day. And I was also saying to them, you are important. Go out there and help grow this practice today. And, you know, every one of my staff, Lisa, I felt was a marketing director of themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So
put it out there and make it go.
Right. And you know, that's the beauty of, yes, you can ask for referrals or how the experience was for a patient, you know, highlight a few patients, but that's where software technology comes in. You know, as soon as the patient leaves the office, send them a text. How did we do today? Make it simple. Make it 5 smiley faces, right? And so you're getting input. Whether you're asking personally or not, you're still getting a lot of people respond to that. And that's so important. That's what people look at for, you know, they go to their friends and family first for a referral, and then they look on social media. And if you aren't representing your practice with positive influence, you know, if you're a 4 or 5, that's great. But if you have anything below that, people look at those and go, maybe I better look for somebody else.
Yep. Going to search a little bit longer.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
Something's not right here. I noticed that one of your blogs was intentional words, engagement, engagement with influence.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting because with my communication with my patients, I was really pretty particular about the words that I used and the phrases that I shared with them. Talk from your perspective, Lisa, from the hygienist side of the chair. Intentional words.
You want to use words that attract the patients that you want, right? And so the higher level of the words, or the more concerned the words that you use have in them, the more accepting the patient is going to be to the treatment. So example, you know, when you say deep cleaning to a patient and start explaining that process, that is not, it's an abrasive kind of conversation. But if you say periodontal therapy, right, people understand therapy and therapy is ongoing. If you go to physical therapy and you don't walk in there and they say, we're going to do four visits and you'll be cured or you'll be done. Physical therapy is open-ended. Right. And so people understand the word therapy a little bit more, and they're more willing to accept that treatment. Same thing with, you know, using words like extraction or rather than removal, right? We're going to remove that third molar. It doesn't sound as harsh. It's more pleasing to the patient. And so picking and choosing words that really adapt to not only the patient's level of education, but also that they can understand it, because, you know, we in dentistry have our own language and we start talking amongst each other. And of course we understand it, but then we use those same words with our patients and they don't understand it. They get the glazed over, you know, deer in the headlight look, and you're not going to get a yes for that treatment plan, because when people don't understand, what do? They don't do anything.
Exactly. Let's see. The phrase confuse, you lose.
Oh, I like that. I never heard that.
Yeah. Without clarity, you know, people are far less likely to accept and do the treatment. You could always tell when you're communicating with a patient, they get that certain look in their eyes, don't they? Like, I'm not following you. This isn't making sense to me. And early on when I was doing treatment plans and consultations with patients, it's kind of like, do you remember the old show on TV, Mr. Ed?
Yes. The horse.
Exactly. The talking horse.
Yep. Yep.
I reflect back upon that. It's kind of like, okay, if you're talking to a horse, you talk horse, right?
Right. Exactly.
When you're talking with patients, the average everyday person walking in off the street, you need to use language that they're going to understand. And it's interesting. One thing that, you know, my practice was basically a cosmetic and a lifestyle dental practice.
Right.
When I was communicating with patients during my initial conversation with a new patient conversation, I tended to use artistic words, words that reflected or gave the impression of art. And because I wanted them to think in a little bit different direction. So it was selective, intentional words, kind of directing the patient's thinking in their mind in the direction that I wanted them to go with this,
right?
That understanding that some dentistry is definitely artwork. And so I that's why I was taken to that blog about intentional words. You also talked earlier about the generational communication. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, Lisa, a little bit more.
So in our workforce right now, we could have possibly five people of different generations in our workforce. And traditionalists are the oldest generation. They're also known as the greatest generation. And they're tiny little percentage. So let's say we have four generations in the workforce right now. So we have baby boomers, Gen X, Gen Y, which are also millennials, and then Gen Z are the youngest generations coming into the workforce. They are also the largest cohort ever. They're bigger than the baby boomers. They're bigger than the Gen Ys. And they are coming in completely rocking our world because they are digital natives. They have never known life without technology. And so we have these gaps, generational gaps of how do we use technology? You know, how do we use this? How do we use that? But on the flip side, we have, you know, the younger generations don't have the experience and the social skills, right? Or the relationship building skills. And so we've got to focus on helping each other learn what we don't know, right? And being open to that. Each generation brought in an amazing skill set into the workforce. And every single generation, there was Adam Pior wrote a really interesting article about the Gen Zs, but every single generation that has come into the workforce has had a cover page on Time Magazine. And every single one has had two things said about them. They have no work ethics and they're so entitled. Every single one of us had that said about us, but we see it more with Gen Y and Gen Z because they have more social media, right? It's much more highlighted, but we all came into the workforce with the same, you know, kind of attitude.
I find that interesting. So that study found that from the baby boomers down to the Gen Z, X, Ys, whatever, that we are perceived as coming into the workforce with no commitment. And what was the other one?
Well, they're entitled and yes. they have no work ethics, which is not true for any of the generations.
Interesting. Yeah. Isn't that interesting that that's the perception though?
Mm-hmm. It's because it's different. Right. It's not the way we've always done it. And they're, you know, the generation coming into the workforce now is really changing the way we employ the employment benefits and the way that we employ them. We've got to appeal to them very differently than we did to other generations because they have a completely different sense of what employment is and how it should be. And they want to really love their job, and they want to know that it's having an impact, not only from a community standpoint, but from a global perspective as well. And so the way that you can emphasize the global area is if you're doing any kind of work overseas, you know, I can't remember the names of some of the organizations, Smile Overseas or anything like that, that is so important for you to highlight to the younger generations because they want to know that you're having a global impact, right? So get it on your website, put a picture of the dentistry that you're doing overseas in your reception area. In the interview, highlight that, you know, we give you the opportunity to travel overseas and do some dentistry to help people that aren't as fortunate as the people in the U.S. That's super important to a younger generation.
Yeah. That is really interesting. I never would have thought that, but when you explain it, that it's a generational perception of who we are, and because the young ones are so different than us, we look at them in a different light, thinking those two concepts. You know, one thing that we talked about earlier on, and I want to circle back to it just a moment, is the need for exceptional communication skills and in the hiring of the people that we bring into the practice. And I guess it depends upon also the leadership skills of the dentist and what he expects from himself and his business, the quality of communication of the individuals that we bring into the practice. I was talking with a young lady this morning, and she is a representative for one of the outside third-party financing companies. And part of the issue that she sees with the dental offices is that the person that is in charge of presenting that third-party financing is a young lady that came in from Indeed and not much experience in the dental office. And she's told to go in there and close the finances. And oh, by the way, one of the things that we offer is this particular financing company and being able to explain the benefits of that. But then also having a great conversation with them prior, possibly to, you know, understand more about who that person is before they throw these options out there. And again, that's where I talked about confuse, you lose.
Right.
We put someone in that position without appropriately training them and then coaching them up with great communication skills.
Right.
And for me, I think that that's one of the individuals that really needs to be one of the better communicators in your practice.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. You have to train people. You can't, I know people are so desperate for employees right now. You know, they're just filling the hole and trying to get somebody in the chair or in the seat, and they're not getting proper training. And so having an SOP, a standard operating procedure for every single position, and also a trajectory of where are you going to be in 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year? And what does that look like? What's important to you? What do we need to focus on? But also the cross training, as much as you can. The more you can cross train your employees, the better off everyone is, because someone can jump in when there's a void, right? And so that communication piece, but going back to what you just said, you know, having somebody present a treatment case and closing the finances, that is an art. And some people are really good at it, and some people should not be doing it, right?
Yeah.
And so you've got to find the person. And then, like you said, train them, level up their communication skills. Even if they're a good communicator, take the time and the expense to level up their communication skills, because you're going to get more cases closed by doing that. It will pay for itself, you know, over time, pretty quickly.
Yeah. In our communication this morning, we were talking about, obviously, outside financing, and, you know, a lot of doctors go, I don't want to pay that percentage to whatever. And I shared with her, I said, you know, take a look at this, though. If your account receivables go up because you're not bringing in money, and or you're losing cases because you're not closing them financially, you know, when a account is on your books for 60 to 90 days, what is it? The value of that account goes down by, what, 30 to 40%, something like that?
Oh, wow.
And so if you can get outside financing and you can have someone that is able to close that financial outside a third party,
right,
their average is about 6% of what the doctor pays of the fee. That is a 24 to 25 up to 30% savings to them. Plus, they have the money in their pocket immediately. So doesn't it behoove the practice to have someone in that position that really communicates with influence and knows how to, the art of communication?
Right.
For me, that's no brainer. But that kind of comes from the head down as far as the expectations of the staff from the doctor, doesn't it, Lisa?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think dentists are very profit-driven, and sometimes they don't look at the big picture of, if I do this now, it's going to help me later, because they run their business differently than a lot of businesses do, right? And so they don't want to spend the money up front, but in the long term, they will be more profitable, but they have to have it explained to them differently, like you just did, and maybe from somebody who experienced it, right? Give them examples of, you know, these doctors did this, and here's how much here's the percentage of productivity that increased because of spending the money up front.
Yeah.
But you have to have a good case, right? You got to present a good business case, and you have to be able to show the return on investment and what is it going to do for the profit of the practice.
Absolutely. Again, part of the podcast here, Lisa, is to bring people in and expose them to the audience, people that have something that can have an impact upon practices. Your communication with influence. Share us a little bit more specifically about that coaching program that you have.
So I do a pretty extensive interview process with the practices just to find out what their pain points are. Right now, I would say retention and engagement are top of the list for across the country. People are having a very hard time getting their employees engaged and just keeping employees happy and keeping them long term. And so that's one of the things that we're really focusing on. Going back to team meetings, right? Structuring your team meetings, getting that up and running. talking to them about, you know, what's important to them now. Because 2 years ago, what was important to them is probably different than what's important to them now. And so we have to continually customize the way that we're communicating, not only with our teams, but also with our patients, because the expectations are different. Everyone's looking for an experience. So how do you take that and level up your communication? One of the programs I teach is called Every Conversation Has Consequences. And it's looking individually at the conversations that we have with patients, with our players, which are team members, and then within the practice. And so the referral handoff, right? It's something we do every day. It's a very common process for us, but how does it look to the patient, right? Do you have every single step engaged with the patient and making it work like a well-greased machine? Or is it, you know, a little bit loose? And then you lose the patient. They don't go to the referral or they don't come back to you, right? That has to be a very calculated process every single time it happens.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because the handoffs in my practice were kind of a golden item. Mm-hmm. Is that we used it as a tool to further enhance the patient experience and know that we looked at them as a person, as an individual. And the last thing I wanted to do was to have a patient go to the front desk and then receptionist look up and go, and who are you and what are you up here for?
Right.
I mean, I know that happens. So an eloquent handoff, you know, says a lot about the interaction, but also it transmits a big message to the patient. And, you know, you're talking about marketing, some of the simple things like that make an influence upon the patient and they can go out and, you know, speak about such an experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. I saw that every conversation has consequences. And then I wrote down below that note, every conversation that we don't have also has consequences.
Ooh, I like that. Yep.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
The conversations and the handoffs and whatever that we don't have, and we don't take the time to master that skill, which is really very simple. We try to make it more difficult than it really is. When we don't have those, again, you confuse, you lose. And everything has a degree of confusion to it at that point. Mm-hmm. So I like what you do, Lisa.
Thank you.
I've investigated you.
I can tell from the questions you're asking.
Yeah, I do my investigative discovery. I think in certain circles, that's called stalking.
I was just going to refer to that.
But for our purposes, I'm going to use one of your words, intentional investigation, so I know my people well. Also, you have a nice conference coming up in the middle of February. Talk to us about that.
I do. Oh, we're so excited about this. It is in Park City, Utah, February 23rd and 24th in 2024. And it's a day and a half of speakers. We have three speakers, myself, Samantha Jones, and Dr. Joel Berg. And it is all how to level up your communications and strategies for your practice to set you up for success for the year. So it's an all-team meeting. You can bring your whole team and really just accelerate some of the things that you're looking to do for that year. And bottom line is it's communication-based to help you increase your productivity, your team engagement, and also just to make a happy career for everybody within your practice. The flip side is it's in Park City in February, and that is the height of the snow season. Yeah. And so you can, you know, that we're right at the resorts, Deer Valley, Park City Mountain. There's other resorts pretty close by, but you're 10 minutes from those at the hotel that we have. It's a beautiful boutique hotel called Park City Peaks Hotel. And you'll have the opportunity to, you know, stay the weekend. We have a great room rate that they've extended 3 days on either side. And you can snowshoe, you can ski, you can snowboard. We'll have a special event on Friday night. We're going to do a horse-drawn sleigh ride.
Oh, awesome.
So I was riding, I was mountain biking at the mountain yesterday at PCMR, and I looked off to the left when I was on the lift with my bike, and the sleighs are actually set up. They're just waiting for snow. So I thought that was fun. I took a picture of it yesterday. I need to post it. But great event. Great event.
Exciting anticipation.
Yep.
Yeah. So the event's going to be all kind of dealing with the soft side of dentistry, correct?
Correct. So, and dental consultants, their teams, as well as dental practices are invited because it's universal strategies for you to use with your teams and transfer into your practice or to your consulting business.
Great. Great.
Thanks for asking.
Well, absolutely. I've seen the invite and the information on this conference, and I'm really excited for you about this. You've got good people. I know Samantha personally, and she's just an outstanding person. And knowing you for what I at this point know you, I know that you're going to present great information. It's going to be a really fun event, something that they can go and learn. And again, I look for things that can have an impact upon the audience. And your information today, Lisa, was definitely doing that. Plus this conference, offering this conference and that type of thing. This is what makes a difference in a dental practice. You know, you can have all the skill set you want technically, but it does your technical dentistry does you absolutely no good unless people are saying yes. And you're able to put them on the schedule. And so the soft side of dentistry, I've always thought, is probably far more important to learn and to master it because it takes your practice off into the upper 20%, upper 5%, upper 2%. And I think for the go-getters and the entrepreneurs, that's where we want to go, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So give us some parting words here, Lisa, that the dentists and the audience can walk away with that can make an impact upon their practice and tease them with something that will stimulate them saying, I've got to get hold of this Lisa and help her learn me how to teach me how to communicate with influence.
Oh, you didn't tell me I was going to have a test. Let's see. My perception or my interpretation is we are all immigrants to the other's generations, and learning to respect each other, learning how people perceive us and how people interpret the way that we act is so important. And you have to understand yourself first and how you're perceived before you can take the next step in that integrative communication, right? And so looking at everybody respectfully and really learning the true art of communication to establish trust and loyalty.
Yeah. Great answer. Great response. So Lisa, I appreciate you being on with me today again, in my stocking. I did learn, you know, you've got a great product out there. You are a person of influence in the dental community, and I appreciate you doing this. Your purpose is to help the dental community and the people that engage with you take their practice and their staff and their lives to a different level. We need more people like you out there making this type of an influence with individuals. And again, I thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I so enjoyed the conversation, and it's been great getting to know you better as well. Samantha speaks so highly of you. It was a really nice treat to have a conversation with you. So thanks for the invitation. Yeah, I appreciate it.
You bet. And we'll have to circle back around after this conference, Lisa.
Absolutely.
And take some notes and share some notes with that.
I would love that.
You bet. So that brings us to a conclusion for today's episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast. And I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.